Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and I am delighted to be united with today's guest, and you're going to love her too. She's a mother of two, wife of one. She's a recovering actor whose big screen credits include Maid of Honor, The Rocker, and my favorite, Alvin and the Chipmunks Road Trip. And on TV, you may have seen her in Happy Endings, Undateable, and Bull. To top it all off, she celebrates and commiserates with world-class experts, best-selling authors, and listeners around the world on the very popular Atomic Moms podcast, where she shares the sweet and messy journey of her growing family and hosts complex discussions about everything mom-related that you can think of. Ellie Noss, welcome to the podcast.
Berlin, you should have written my bio.
Well, you know what?
I'm going to transcribe that, and I'm going to slap that up on iTunes.
Thank you. I love it. You're welcome. Anytime. I do bio services. If I really wrote your bio, it would go on much longer.
But
we're low-budget production. That's all we have time for.
Because I'm so accomplished.
I mean, you really are. You're unique and interesting. I love talking to you on the rare chances that I get. I'm always devastated when you give birth because then I don't get to hang out with you anymore.
That's so true, and I'm so sorry. Maybe I should work on that again. She's 10 months old. I just got my period back. So.
Oh, really? Well, we have nothing in common. But I mean, so far.
I just mean it's possible, but there are no plans for the near future.
Yeah. I mean, I'm ready.
You're ready for me to get pregnant again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying if that's what you were waiting for, I'm ready.
This second pregnancy was rough. I was on bed rest, and
hey,
I don't want to do it again.
Let's not.
I apologize.
Yeah. Plus, if we start working together earlier, you never know. I love talking to you because I think you're real. I think you're hilarious. I think you're refreshingly human, and I want to know how you became that way. So let's go back to the beginning. Where are you from? Where did you come from?
Oh, my God. I feel like this is my opportunity to be on Inside the Actor Studio.
Yes, this is your time.
Okay, well, James Lipton, I grew up in Houston, Texas.
I do have the beard.
And I went to a performing and visual arts high school.
You don't sound Texas at all.
My parents were transplants.
From?
My parents got married in Chicago. My father's from Ohio. My mom was born in New Jersey.
Oh, that's a whole lot of accent.
Yeah, although they didn't really have accents either. We just sound really white.
You do.
And so they moved to Houston, I think, within that first year of marriage. Never a good idea, although it does sound like that happens quite often. And
moving big city moves right after.
Yeah, like let's just move away from any support system.
All of our family.
Yeah. And
that could be double-edged.
The marriage didn't go well.
Ooh.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, really?
But maybe it was my fault. Maybe.
Is that what they told you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know how they always say
to
children, like, it's not your... Oh, yeah. That actually would have been really, really awful. Mm. No. So they got divorced when I was very young. I grew up in blended families. I'm an only child, but I have six sort of siblings, step-siblings from my mother's second marriage and stepsisters from my mom's marriage now.
So they're all steps. There's no halves.
And then I have halves.
Oh, you have halves.
I have halves. My little brother, Jack, he came along when I was in third grade, and my sister, Laura, came along when I was, I think, in eighth grade, or I guess I was a freshman.
Are those from different parents of yours?
Yes. I'm my mother's only child,
okay.
And my father has the two others.
Wow. So you're an only child with a whole bunch of siblings.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I grew up in Houston, no accent, and it was a really great place to grow up, actually.
Y'all.
I say y'all. Yeah, get me drunk.
You do?
Yeah. Oh my God, yes.
Happily get you drunk.
Okay. I guess.
Just saying, we can do another episode. This is sober.
Yeah. Well, we can,
Sober Ellie and Texas Ellie.
Mm-hmm. And so then I went to college in Western Massachusetts to get as far away as possible from my parents. And it was a women's college. And that was a really intense and awesome experience.
What did you study?
I was a theater major. I think I was one course short of being a double major in English.
Oh, really?
But
you just couldn't go there, the extra mile, the extra.
You know, I ended up graduating early instead. And also...
Oh, you get to show off either way.
Yeah, I took this Shakespeare class for the non-English majors.
Okay.
And And so to be an English major, I was going to have to take it again for English majors. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to graduate early and I'm going to go to LA and be on the WB.
Oh, aim high.
I aimed really high. And the WB wouldn't have me.
What are you talking about? How could that be?
I don't know.
Wait a second. You did like theater stuff in high school as well?
Yeah. It was great.
Acting?
It was so...
How old were you when you realized you want to be like actish?
Middle school.
Was it something you saw?
I was obsessed with dance.
Okay.
Through elementary school.
Ooh, do you dance?
I went to magnet school. I did, and I loved it.
Really?
And I loved musicals, although I can't sing to save my life.
Everybody has their strengths.
But that's why I love your work, right? Like your body work, because that's I got so into that through dance because I realized like, oh, I'm fully present when I'm dancing. Like I'm out of my head, and I'm not being
part
of myself.
I used to be a big dancer as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've danced maybe twice, but I felt big both times.
Felt big.
Yeah. So in that way, I was a big dancer.
You'd be great. You'd be so good at the lifts. We could do the dirty dancing.
I think that's the only
swan
part.
Thing. Yeah, that'd be great.
Drunk, dirty dancing.
Yeah, I'm in. Count me
and
in.
And if I drop you, I can probably put you back together again.
There you go. So middle school, I didn't see something. Honestly, I didn't fit in. I didn't like middle school at all. We moved to the suburbs and I didn't know anyone. And it was a K through 12 school where everyone had known each other since kindergarten.
Forever.
And I was just driving into Houston every day to go to dance instead after school. And I was a weird theater kid, like on the inside. So when I could do monologues in drama class and be big and weird, the popular girls had to sit there and watch me. Like, it's like where I found my power. And then they would get up and they would be so insecure. And I was like, okay, this is
this
cool.
Is my thing.
There's something here. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Very good. I was a drama major.
I didn't know that.
As well, yeah.
You did so many things.
Just to stick it to the popular girls.
Yeah, right.
That was my thing. Why did I do it? It was dramas in my family. My father was the president of the Dramatic Society in the college I went to, and then my brother was in the Dramatic Society, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to do this. But I love being somebody else for a little while.
Yeah.
That's what I like about acting. You create these worlds, and you could just be somebody else.
Yep. I really liked the sense of connection with another human being. Like, it felt safe to do it in theater. Like, we had these pages and then we could connect. And in real life, I had a harder time with that because I felt insecure.
So you're connecting with the other actors, the other characters, connecting with the
like
audience?
Like looking into someone's eyes and actually relating to the other person. And also being able to have these big feelings that I was not, what the hell I'll say it, like I do not feel like I was allowed to have growing up. You could be big and you could be angry. Like you could be, I didn't have to be the sweet little good girl.
Hmm.
So that, I really loved
that. It is therapeutic.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever write?
Mm-hmm.
Because I also find writing really therapeutic. You just create these worlds and whatever you want to happen, it just happens until it gets away from you and becomes its own world.
Well, yeah. Until you start trying to edit it and then it all falls apart.
Or somebody else tries to edit it.
Yeah, and then they ruin it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but you
it.
Married a writer.
I did marry a writer.
A writer and an actor, is that like opposites attract or is that?
No, I think it was like my version of social climbing. I thought, I stupidly thought that if I married a writer that I would make it.
To the WB?
And what?
To the WB?
Yeah, right. no, that was like a year after the WB. I got engaged when I was 23 and married when I was 24.
Oh, wow.
So,
was that young among your
oh, my God, yes.
People? Yeah.
Oh, my, yeah. It was outrageously young.
Is it, why did you want to get married that young? Was it, I mean.
He was just so right.
How did you meet?
We met at a bar. It was after an acting class. I was wearing a t-shirt and like really greasy faced. It was Third Stop. And he was there with two friends from high school. This bar was called Third Stop. It had just recently opened. And it's kind of like a fun pub feeling. Like, it wasn't like a club. And the cool thing is we had our baby girls across the street at Cedars.
Oh,
at the
really?
Hospital.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a circle.
So we've been married 11 years this summer. And
congratulations.
He just felt good. He was a little older. Both his sisters had gotten married within
the
year.
He's probably still a little older.
He's a little older still, although it seems like,
you feel like you're catching
I'm
up.
Catching up.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, some people have been making comments, and I'm like, it's just because I have two small children.
No, maybe he's like becoming more youngish.
Yeah. He looks good. I'm lucky.
Aw, you're
I'm
both lucky.
Well, yeah, except that the marrying the writer thing, it doesn't work out because writers have zero power. Like, they do not care about you. It's almost as bad as being an actor, like a not working actor. And he's a working writer.
Yeah, he's very successful.
So he just did Rampage with Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne,
The Rock. And it was really funny because he's supposed to go do the red carpet. And like, he's just standing there, but like, no one knows who he is and no one cares who he is.
And he wrote it.
And he wrote it. Like, his name's on it.
Funny.
And nobody cares, but he has to just, like, wait there for somebody to eventually, like, ask him who he is.
What are you doing here?
Basically trying to, like, get him to leave. And then he says, like, oh, hi, I'm Adam Stiekel. I don't know if I'm supposed to go somewhere. And then they look at the list and they're like, oh, yeah, okay, so Susie, you take him. And then he does the red carpet thing. But it's just such a charade. It's great.
Aww.
He hates all of it. It's really fun.
Does he really? But he likes writing.
He likes writing, and he really likes... that he just ordered these ridiculous toys on Amazon for our four-year-old.
Aww.
She gets to play with this giant crocodile thing that was in the movie. It was like such a ridiculous
from the movie.
But that's fun.
That is really fun. And fun for the kids, too. And you like acting.
No, I quit acting.
You don't like acting.
I liked acting.
You don't
acting.
Need the therapy anymore?
No, I needed so much therapy from it.
Wait a second. But it
I know,
started
it's
off
weird. It starts
therapy.
Off. You're right.
Then what happens?
And then you move to L.A. and you pursue your dream and you get your teeth kicked in. No,
every couple of hours.
No, you know, it didn't feel good. Going to auditions didn't feel good when I got them. I'm very sensitive to my surroundings. And I did not like going into a room and just feeling the judgment. Have you seen the show Barry on HBO?
No.
Because that's what it feels like.
I have to check it out.
Yeah. It's, or even La La Land, like the beginning with Emma Stone. Like,
oh, yeah.
I just had a lot of moments like that where I was this doesn't feel good. And I have a lot of energy and I have a lot of passions and I want to create. I'm not good with downtime. And also with my husband, I felt like Lucille Ball. Like, I was always trying to, like, sneak my way into his stuff. Like, it worked sometimes.
Ellie, what are you doing here?
Yeah, actually, they had to replace me in one thing because I was pregnant when they were doing reshoots.
Oh, no.
The funny thing was I was supposed to be pregnant in it. It was very confusing, but I was too pregnant. I was, like, a week before having a baby.
I hate being too pregnant.
Yeah, don't you?
But it sounds like it feels to me like you'd be more of like a small theater lover in terms of acting than a big screen actor.
You're saying I should just do regional?
Well, I'm just saying, career aside, what you like, it just sounded like you loved getting into a role and connecting with the other characters and actors and connecting with the audience. Like, that's what I loved about theater.
Yeah.
And you can't really get that in TV and movies.
No, but you know where we get it? Right here, Berlin.
Oh, right, because you have right this fantastic podcast.
This is where I get it. It's so much better for me than acting ever was.
When I listen to your podcast, I always close my eyes and picture you having a late-night TV show.
Oh, really?
That's what I would want for you. For me, for you.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, your podcast is great, but I need more.
You need more? But would it be, here's my question for you, since this is going to turn into a consultation, which is basically what I do, everything
in life. Let me start the meter. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Oh, God. You're too expensive, but can you crack my neck while we're at it?
Absolutely.
So going from the vulnerable, like, psychological stuff that I love to dig into, but then there's also the, like, fun, silly, crass stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a hybrid. And I don't know, like, how could you do that?
What do you mean? Late night is all about that.
You think so?
You have your, I mean, you would do your own brand, your own style of it, but you have your monologue, your witty observations and take on what's going on in the world. Then you have your interviews, which in your case, you can make as serious as you want to, I think.
Thank you.
I don't think they have to be always funny. What a new style where you have your observations and your monologue, serious conversations with people, not the like canned answers and the canned questions that they come in the story that they pre-wrote, but like real stuff. Like you.
Ooh, I love this.
Yeah, you getting into them and like getting out real stuff and sharing your own real stuff because you're not afraid to do that at all.
Yeah, I don't know why it really upsets my mother.
Well, I do so far based on what we've talked about. And then also, you know, that platform lends itself to being able to do some sketch stuff and crafts, you know.
Okay. I'm going to write this in my notebook. All I need to do is go get a late night chow. I'm on it.
That's it. That's all you need. Thank you for coming tonight, by the way.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to tell you that for a while.
Thank you.
All right. There's a million things I want to talk to you about. Let's talk about motherhood because that's such a big part of your life now.
Yeah, right.
In so many ways, in the fact that you've done it times two and you do it every day. And also you have this podcast. First, I want to find out about your own experiences. How soon after you went to Third Stop?
Did I get knocked up?
Yeah.
I waited a long time.
Hours?
Hours. Mm. No, we got married in 2007, and then we had my first daughter in 2013.
Oh, so you waited a long time to have kids deliberately?
Deliberately.
You thought, I want to be married right away, but not the next step.
Yes.
Both of you felt that way?
Yeah. No, I mean, he wanted children soon after, I think, but I wasn't ready at all. Because I wanted to be an actor.
Oh, right. You still had that small thing going on.
I still had
If only then I could have told you about the late night TV situation.
I just had that dream. And my fears were that I would lose my identity, that none of my friends had children, so I would lose my community. And I was afraid that it would be a big stressor on our marriage because I think it probably was for my parents. Mm. And
I wondered about that.
All of those things. Oh, and I was just like, I don't know how to feed myself, let alone a child. Like, I don't know how to do this. And I always had this weird thing of like, well, here, it was really great those first years because he was a screenwriter. We could go live anywhere.
Ah.
And so I did make a deal with him. Where I said, okay, I will have your baby if we can go live in New York for 3 months.
New York?
Which is like a bucket list thing.
Okay.
So,
for 3 months?
For 3 months. So we did it. And it was so much fun. And then I immediately got pregnant.
Wow. You kept up your end of the deal.
Yeah. I should have asked for more. I should have asked for a brownstone. But at least I got that. And I'm so glad we did that before we had children because it'd be much harder now. But
did you also feel ready before you made that deal? Like something change?
Mm.
Or did you think nothing's ever going to change? Or?
Yeah. You know, I was very concerned about becoming a mother. I was afraid of the responsibility. I was afraid of the relationship. And I realized after I had this like crazy medical experience where I had this, I had a tumor. So I had taken a stand-up comedy class, and at the end, you like perform your stand-up act, and mine was all about not wanting to have a kid.
Hold on a second. Do you have that on video somewhere?
Yeah.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
Badly.
It was all about not wanting to be a mom. And
Brilliant.
Then a month later, I get diagnosed with this tumor, and so I have to have this major surgery, and I can't walk for months and months.
Tumor?
It's called a giant cell tumor. It's one in a million. And it dissolved a huge chunk of my femur bone.
Oh, in your bone.
And you...
So you had pain?
I was limping a little bit. Yeah,
limping
a little
bit. That's how you found it?
They did an x-ray.
Because you had pain?
Yeah.
In your bone.
They thought, like, everyone was like, oh, you have a tight IT band.
Yeah.
No, I had a massive bone dissolving tumor. So
you probably had both.
I wasn't allowed. Yeah, and a tight, exactly. I did have both. Then the doctor said, you don't get pregnant. Like, you need at least, I think he said, 2 years. Or maybe it was a year. Don't get pregnant.
Wait, so they remove the tumor?
They remove the tumor. They fill it with bone cement. I did it in Houston.
Where do you buy bone cement? Is that right. An Amazon, Etsy? Where?
Yeah, it's like putty.
Wood putty.
And I was in Houston with both my parents, who were adorable together. It was like a Nancy Meyers film. Like, it was so silly because they are such opposites, and they both had to try to take care of me. And one day, my mother came home from work. She's a total workaholic. She's like Murphy Brown. She's a big lawyer. And she comes home from work, and her ex-husband is laying on the lounge chair by the pool with me, because I had, you know, I was like recovering and couldn't walk. But he's laying, I think he had his shirt off, and she's coming home from work. And it was like her worst nightmare, because both their spouses were out of town for some reason.
Oh, no.
It was so, so, so silly.
I see what you did. You weren't getting the roles that you wanted, so you just created your own little drama.
I also created my own parent trap. All I had to do was grow a tumor and bring my parents together. So I waited a year because my condition can be estrogen linked. So they say don't get pregnant that first year because there's a high recurrence rate for the tumor.
Back. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and also I'd been pumped full of all this stuff for surgery. So then I couldn't have the child, and then wanted to do New York, and then got pregnant. And it was perfect timing for me, because then all my friends got pregnant shortly thereafter, and all of my fears, per usual, didn't come true. None of them did. It was great. I had something to talk to people about, like their children. Like, if anyone's ever wondering or feeling like wondering what to say to someone, or feeling insecure at a party or something, just ask them about their children.
Oh, yeah,
people light up.
Yeah,
they
you don't
talk
even have
about
to
it.
Talk again.
They're yeah, just, you don't. You can put the attention on the other person.
Before you know it, the iPhone's out. Here's all the pictures from the day they were born.
Because it connects us, right? And if you can be honest, why am I saying you? If when I can be honest, like in that mom group, like I did Pump Station when she was a few months old.
Oh, like Mommy and Me?
Yeah. Some of those women are still my closest friends.
Really?
And we've all had our second kids together. And because when you're in that circle and you're so sleep deprived and your hair is so greasy and stringy and you're all complaining about your partner because you'd rather rage at your partner than your baby.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There's that commiseration, right? Like, there's nothing like
it's a close bond.
Yeah.
You don't need to be an actor anymore. You have kids now.
Well, that's a tricky thing to say, right?
Is it?
Yeah. No one should give up on their dreams. I just pivoted into a dream that fulfilled me.
Well,
because I wasn't getting the auditions. I didn't feel empowered when I was doing it. I felt very insecure. And then I was able to find through the podcast, because this was 2014. I don't think Serial had started yet. Podcasts were not very, you know, not like now. And I loved listening to them, though. And I knew that I wanted to talk to other moms, but I really wanted to get the experts in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have the free consultations. And I wanted to offer this to the mamas, you know, in Iowa.
A bigger audience. Yeah, well,
they don't have access.
Yeah.
They don't get to I was going to say something inappropriate, but they don't get to have you, like, you know, snap their neck.
Yeah. Now I have no
idea. I was
going to
say massage your butt, but.
Oh, fair enough. No, they don't, but they can always come here for a little.
There's a lot of tension.
You know what? I recently have patients coming from all over the place. We just literally had someone who flew in from Chicago.
That's probably the podcast.
Maybe.
Could
I don't
be.
Know. Could have been your podcast when I came on there.
Well, that was a delight.
Oh, thanks.
You came over. I was 16 days post-birth.
Yeah.
And you came over, and we talked, and everybody, oh, my God. Elliot's story of how he met his wife is the most darling thing I've ever heard.
Well, it's not, you know, a bar across the street from Cedars, but it'll do. All right, let's take a little break. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come right back with Ellie Noss and find out all about your pregnancies, your childbirths, and your podcast. Don't go anywhere. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and user code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin. We're continuing our discussion with Atomic Mom, Ellie Noss. All right, let's talk about pregnancy. How was it for you?
Oh, the first one was a dream. But don't worry, everyone. The second one was really rough. So I get to say that it was a dream because the first one, that one was...
You were 27?
Yeah. Okay. No, wait. I turned 30 when I gave birth the first time.
Oh, so like 29, 30.
Yeah. Yeah, you're trying to do the math and that of how old I am. I don't think that's legal. I'm just kidding.
Well,
I'm not old.
I assume 27. I just assumed you're 27 now.
I am.
Thank you.
I'm Benjamin Button. moving on. So my first pregnancy was really, you know, the first trimester was terrible.
Wait,
same with the second.
Before that, how did you find out?
Oh, I peed on a stick.
Oh, did you
There was nothing
suspect?
That exciting. It was our first try.
Oh.
And did I suspect? Yes. I suspected and I took a pregnancy test and it came back negative. I went to...
Did you feel different?
Oh, hi. I drank a ton with my girlfriends.
Because of the negative pregnancy
mm-hmm.
test? Okay.
And then I took another test like 4 days later and it was positive.
Ooh.
And I was like, thank God I got that one last weekend in.
Some people would panic, but not you.
No. She's got to be hardy. Maybe that's why she's a total party animal now.
Really?
Okay. Oh, my God.
That's the secret.
That might have been it. And so first trimester, you know, the typical just sick and exhausted.
Sick in the morning? Sick all day?
Mostly afternoon, evenings.
Throw
really
up or no
sick.
Throw up?
I threw up. On the drive to the airport to my grandmother's funeral.
Oh.
And we had to pull over on Highland
right
so I could
flying.
Throw up before flying to go to my grandmother's funeral in Chicago. So that there was that. And then the end of the pregnancy was great. I was walking all the time. I got very excited about hypnobirthing. I was listening to your episode with Alicia Tambori.
Oh, recently, yeah.
Yeah, she was one of our first... experts. And
what led you there? Are you like a sort of a more natural, holistic, meditative person in general?
I'm a total fake hippie.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I think it means...
Which part is real and which part is fake?
Maybe it's all fake or it's all real. Maybe this is what they mean when my husband was like, I go, why do people say I'm authentic? Like, it's a really kind thing to say to someone. He goes, they're not saying it as a compliment.
No, I think
they're
we
just,
are.
That you just, I don't know. It's just who I am. I think I believe in the some of the energy stuff when it comes to myself. But that's mostly...
Like when you found out you had a giant cell tumor. That's scary.
I'm great in a crisis.
First of all, you want to hear you have like a tiny cell tumor.
No, I thought... That's funny. I thought one in a million. God, I knew I was special. It's a one in a million tumor. Like, there was something about it, that whole experience. I guess I'm probably really good at protecting myself. So I spend my daily life anxious, or I used to. I've gotten so much better. Mm. And actually preparing for my first labor really helped me in that area. But I would feel super anxious with everyday stuff. And then, man, give me a trauma and I'm aces.
Oh, really?
I make all the jokes. I'm getting pushed through. I'm on the gurney, like going into surgery. And the nurse says, do you have any questions? And I said, what should I do with my life? This is like right before they're hacking my leg open.
Right. And putting cement in there.
And ripping out a disgusting, gooey,
giant cell
massive,
tumor.
Horrible. Yeah. So I thrive in chaos. But where did we start
with
this?
I was asking you like how you cope.
Oh.
Did you use meditation to like cope through that?
Afterwards, I went on a silent meditation retreat for 7 days.
So
which was scary. That was scary. Yeah.
The surgery.
Seeker. How about this? I'm a seeker.
You're a seeker.
I seek out truths and ways of, feeling good and learning to accept myself.
I like that.
So
I want to be a seeker.
The birth stuff was good for that because I wanted to feel empowered. My mother had a very difficult delivery.
With you.
With me. She didn't know her tailbone was broken or something. It's like classic of my mother.
Previously, before she gave birth? Oh, and then you re-injured it?
I don't know, but she had a very, very long labor, and then I was a C-section delivery.
Okay, I could tell right away the first time I met you.
What? That I was
you
C-section?
Were a C-section, yeah.
Because my head's so perfect?
No, yes.
Because I don't breathe? Why?
No.
Not that that would have anything to do with breath. I don't know.
I don't know. I was just making a joke, but then you took it somewhere.
See? I'm seeking.
You're
tell
always
me
seeking.
About myself, Berlin.
You want to know stuff. I could make stuff up.
I do. It drives my husband crazy because I always want to know the why of something.
And he's not a seeker? He's
no.
Just let it go?
No. He's more of a like, I know everything. It doesn't matter. I don't know.
Oh.
No, he's much more of a, he'll go more into an existential crisis. And I'm more of a, let's figure out how we're all connected.
Oh.
But
so there, it is an opposites attract sort of situation.
Yeah, for sure. And that was so cool with our first birth because Alicia Tamburi we took her hypnobirthing class because my OBGYN said, hey, look, if you want to try to have an unmedicated birth, try to get in and take this class.
But why did you want unmedicated birth? It's seemingly uncommon.
I had had, at the time, I feel like it was uncommon because at least I didn't have any friends who had done it except for one of my best friends from college. No, two of my best friends from college actually had unmedicated births. And they, said, it's great, try. Just go for it, whatever. My brother-in-law said there's not a chance in hell that I would be able to. Withstand the pain. And
why would your brother-in-law say that?
Because his wife, my husband's sister, Sarah, who's amazing, they're both amazing, she was a CrossFit trainer and insanely
fit.
And he said that after witnessing her in the first parts of labor, that it was so excruciating that there's no way I could do it. And so I was, I am driven by anger and competition.
Challenge.
And I just wanted a full experience. That was my thing. And listen, I know that childbirth is such a sensitive topic. It is deeply personal. And for me, I thought, what the hell? Like people bungee jump. They do these other things to feel exhilarated, to feel life at its fullest. I want to try to have this experience, and we'll see what happens. And I was not, after I had that little thing with my brother-in-law, like I didn't tell people, and I would shrug it off because I didn't want the expectations placed on me, because I knew that there was so much out of my control, physically, you know, and with my baby, and what does she want? And I do really believe that our children come into the world the way that they are meant to.
Drunk.
No. What do you mean by drunk?
No, because you drank right when you found out you were pregnant.
Oh, right.
But that probably wore off.
I thought you were saying something about medicated birth.
No.
God, drunk? Don't go there.
Well, I think actually when you don't have the pharmaceuticals, then the babies do come out quite drunk on your own.
Yeah,
on
that
your
makes
own
sense.
Hormones.
And also I took a lot of drugs afterwards. I was high as a kite after they were both born.
Okay, wait a second.
Because of stitches and everything else.
How did your labor start?
My labor started, she was 2 weeks early. And it started at around 7 a.m. on September 11th.
Never let you get away. What? Oh, hold on 1 second. Back up for 1 second. Alicia Timber would never let you get away with saying 2 weeks early.
Well, she doesn't have a say because I was late in taking her class, so I only had 2 classes with her.
Oh, you didn't get through the other two?
I was supposed to get through the other two before I gave birth, and instead my baby came 2 weeks early on September 11th, and luckily I had a doula. It was so silly. It was like my water broke. That was the first sign, so I tried to stall as long as possible, but I had group B strep, so I knew I had to go to the hospital. You know, everyone says that you get hungry, so you should eat before you go. It was lunchtime. You know, we stalled for a while. We ended up at In-N-Out Burger, and I got a burger and fries that I ate on the way to the hospital. We have video of us at the drive-thru. And then I gave birth at 9 o'clock at night.
How long later is that?
You know, we checked in probably around 12.
Noon?
So, 12:30.
Oh, so it wasn't such a long later.
No, and it was... It was cool because I had called my mother that morning when my water broke.
I think
broke.
Your sister-in-law was messing with some In-N-Out Burger.
There you go, right?
Maybe
she's too healthy.
Too fit.
And, well, the ridiculous thing was we get to – I didn't know that mothers on occasion throw up in labor, and I didn't this time. My second child, I threw up 3 times.
Oh.
Lovely. And no In-N-Out. But I got to the hospital, and they were going to check me, and I said, please don't check me yet. I want to wait till my doula's here, but I know that my water's broken and I don't want to be checked because then I'm on the clock, right?
Yeah.
And the nurse was like, yeah, then you're on the clock. Okay. And I said, but you know what? I really have to go to the bathroom. And she's like, you do? And I was like, yeah, I have to go number 2. And she like turned white.
She didn't want to let you go.
And she goes, oh my God. I go, well, she goes, that could be a sign that you're having the baby. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I had in and out.
That should be a commercial for
it. It was so ridiculous. And so then I got to do the doula shows up. I had the baby, you know, I was in the bathtub and I was listening to the hypnobirthing thing again and again and again.
Wait, so your contractions built up on their own?
Yeah, well, so then we have to back up. My doula was, you know, smartly said, try to get it going. Ignorance is bliss. Because I didn't realize how difficult, I've spoken to midwives since, that can be, a challenge. So we were doing construction on our house. My water breaks. We go for a walk. Then there's like the occasional contraction, but not really. And so then I, even though there were workers, there were people working on the house downstairs, I took out the vibrator.
Oh.
Because I was told that that would help. So I had some orgasms, and then we went to In-N-Out.
What a day.
I had my baby, and she was born at 9 o'clock sharp. And you know, it was a very intense experience, but it was a beautiful experience. And
so, were you having contractions at In-N-Out?
That's when it really started to pick up.
What did they feel like?
They were painful.
In the front?
I don't remember.
Oh.
But they feel like period cramps to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that And you could see actually in the video, it's like, I'm really like, because we were in line for a while in the drive-thru. And then I was like, this, my husband, I'm like, do you want anything? He's like, no, I'm not hungry. Cause he's just panicked. Like, what is my, cause I'm sure I was stalling. I was trying to come up with like anything else to do than to go have this baby. Cause I think, you know, there was some fear there. And, mm-hmm. and so a cool thing though, my mother, I call her in Houston at 7 a.m. Of course, she had been in LA for work. She had just flown back to Houston. I call her. And she gets on a plane, she flies back, and I got to feel her during the labor because I wore an eye mask the entire labor, which I highly recommend to everyone. I don't know, Mama's Instagram me or something, if you have done this, because I don't know anyone else who's done it. They mm-hmm. tell you to bring an eye mask so you can rest or sleep in the hospital. I wore it the whole time like a real freak. And I think that's when the theater background comes into play. Because I was just like, some of the photos the doula took kind of, it looks sort of like Swedish porn, but I felt like a weird black box, like 1960s experimental play. Because when my eyes were closed, I could really feel into my body. I wanted to shut out the hospital. I didn't want to see the lights. I didn't want to see the medical equipment. I didn't want to think about my surgeries for my knee tumor. And I was able to really go within. And that was immensely helpful. My second birth, I didn't have time for the eye mask because she was born in 4 hours. And that was a freight train out of hell.
Because it was so fast?
It was so fast. I saw you when I was on modified bed rest because she was sunny side up.
Yeah.
The reason I was on modified bed rest is I had irritable uterus, so I was having these contractions all the time that would make my stomach just really, really, really tight. It didn't feel like labor, which I didn't realize until I went into labor again. Like, oh no, this was that
this
feeling.
This is labor.
But it was a very tight, hard, awful feeling. I went to the hospital, and they had tested me for some fluid that is a protein.
Yeah.
So my test came back positive for it. Mm-hmm. So they put me on modified bed rest.
That's why they put you under rest. Got you.
So I thought she was going to come really early. I was totally freaked out for months. And then she came like 4 days before I was due.
Which to you probably seemed late.
Yeah. I'd been waiting for months. I mean, I was so happy. Listen, so grateful.
Yeah.
She was 8 pounds, 6 ounces.
So healthy.
Wait, no, 8 pounds, 9 ounces.
Healthier.
She was big.
And you're not.
It came out. It was so fast.
Did labor start first this time?
Yes. It was so weird.
Yeah.
Because I thought I'd get the heads up with the water breaking.
No heads up.
Instead, I woke up and I kept, I got some cramps, but I'd been getting cramps for months. Like every day it felt like I was going to have the baby. But these, I timed them and they were much more regular and they would come and go. When I had irritable uterus, it was like a constant contraction for like 10 minutes at a time. And I called my doula. It was a different doula this time. Her name is Carmen Bourne. Mm. She is unbelievably awesome. And she said, okay, Mama, you're having this baby today. Let's, I'm going to meet. She goes, you have to remind me, do you have any cats? Because she can't come to your house if you have cats.
Oh,
and I was like, because she's allergic. I was like, no, but I have group B strep. She's like, we're going to meet at the hospital. I'll see you there. And we drove to the hospital. My girlfriend Whitney was at the house with the two kids because the second baby, it's so hard because you got to figure out what you're going to do with the first kid.
Yeah, there's a lot of plans.
And you never know when it's going to happen.
Plans.
And we're like on an island. We don't have any family here. So Whitney Anderson stepped in and took my other daughter to preschool and then brought her to the hospital that afternoon to meet her baby sister.
Wow.
But 4 hours, that
I'm
one was excruciating.
Again?
Just at the very beginning, and then no time for anything.
No burgers,
nothing. I had some eggs before we left. Probably shouldn't have because
that's what came up.
It came. No, yeah, actually. Yeah. So we got in the tub again. No hypnobirthing. It was.
It's interesting because were you GBS positive again?
Yeah.
And they didn't care if you got in the tub.
They didn't care about the tub. They cared about the antibiotic, and I wish I had known. that if you have, well, I'm not the expert, but what I was very concerned about getting her that antibiotic. Mm-hmm. Because they give it to you a couple times before you deliver.
I like to do 2 doses 4 hours apart.
Yeah. And so obviously we didn't get to have the second dose. But right. I wish if I could go back in time, I would like pat myself on the shoulder and be like, it's okay, Ellie. Like she doesn't need the second dose. She can get it after she's born. Mm-hmm. Because I was very concerned. I went into the whole thing so differently.
When it goes that quickly, some people don't do it at all.
Right. And so I was ready to go home the next day. And my pediatrician said, you know what? We're going to keep you guys here one more day because we're just not going to risk it with the baby. She had another experience with that. And she's like, it's not worth it. We'll just check her out.
Give it one more day.
Yeah, which was great to spend the night at the hospital. Actually, that when you have another child at home and you have a husband who snores, if you have earplugs, the hospital, it was like vacation for me.
Plus you get that juice cocktail. It's really nice.
Yeah, plus I had painkillers. It was awesome. So that was the second birth. But that I had to pop my own – I had burst my own water for that one.
What do you mean?
Because I could not deliver – she wasn't going to come out until my water broke. My OBGYN was standing right there. Everyone was ready. And my doula, it was time to break the water. And so my doula said, okay, my OBGYN said, which I thought was really cool. She was like, I'm not going to intervene right now if I don't need to because you're doing, like, why start that ripple effect?
Yeah.
I'm going to stand aside and take your time. And my doula said, okay, we're going to turn over and you're going to bear down.
She's
you're going to do it 4 times.
Okay.
And the cool thing she did for mamas out there, there were a few times, and she's such a mama bear, she would put her hand, I would say to her, I'm really getting in my head right now because I was anxious about not getting the medication to my child that she needed. I was, there was a lot of people coming in and out of the room this time. I was in much more of I had more of like a mama bear quality than I did. My first one, I was way more relaxed and sort of like, I'm going to take a back seat to this experience and, whatever happens, it happens. Yeah. Backseat to my own body and like just give it up and let it, whatever happens, happen. And this time it felt much more like I was in the trenches.
You were trying to control stuff.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like I needed to because there were nurses coming in wanting me to sign the paperwork and stuff, and they were in my head. I was like, I am going through a contraction right now.
Yeah.
And there was no time between. Mm-hmm. They just
had. Oh, you didn't have breaks?
The breaks were so short.
Yeah. Because you got hit by a train.
They didn't have.
Really fast.
So the nurses didn't know. And my doula was wonderful in protecting me.
Yeah.
But they wanted me to fill out this stuff and they would start talking. And I'm very sensitive to sound. And I would just be like, can you shut up?
Did you tear with both of them?
Yeah.
The same?
I think so. Maybe a little less. The second time it healed much faster.
Mm-hmm.
But when little Eliza came, and I'm obsessed with Hamilton, and like there were 2 songs that just kept playing on repeat, it felt like we had really gone through something huge together.
Mm.
It was an incredible experience and so intense. And if I got pregnant again, I don't know. Like, I can't imagine going from 0 to 60 even faster. Because that Friday, like 2 days before I gave birth, I went to the OBGYN and there were no signs.
Are you a definitely not at home birth kind of person?
I think next time, the only concern would be the group B.
Hmm.
And I just, it feels good to me to wear my eye mask and
you could wear that at home.
To be belligerent with the very kind nurses.
Yeah.
And
I only say that because, number one, who knows, it could be faster or slower, but you don't have to go anywhere.
Right.
Number two is it sounds like you like the water experience. Number three is just on that last one, the chaos of getting there and going through all the procedural things.
I agree.
Didn't sound hearing it as kind of relaxing sort of as being able to put on your eye mask and just sit back, relax, and let your body do its thing. So
I agree. I hear you. I wish that they could, you know, there are birthing centers, and maybe I would look into that.
Well, we'll talk.
We'll talk. I don't think I'm going to do it again.
Oh, so sad.
But we'll talk. I think both my girls came out in very different ways. And God, it feels so good once they're out. and, you know, it was an otherworldly experience. I had a wonderful guest on the podcast, Britta Bushnell, and she...
Ooh.
Have you spoken to
her? Yeah, mythology.
Yeah. And she came on and we spoke about... I listened to her episode with you, actually. We talked about all of that. I'm trying to remember the title of it. I think because I just, when I start thinking about this stuff, my brain goes offline because it's such a primal experience. And what's cool about what Britta says in our conversation is how it's like going into the underworld. And I really feel like it is that motherhood is a transformative experience like that. And it mm-hmm. isn't all cuddles and burning sage. it is dark and it is brutal and it is beautiful. And it's just a trip.
I wonder if you'll come back for another episode because we just scratch on the surface with you.
Oh,
I want to know your
to.
Take on postpartum and motherhood and raising two and
thank you.
And all the other things. I just learned stuff sitting here listening to you.
You're so kind.
But I do want to before
a good
we
man.
Well, thanks. Before we wrap it up, I want to talk a little bit about the Atomic Moms podcast.
Mm.
And your mission there seems pretty clear. Like you want to, it sounds twofold. Like you want the information yourself.
Yeah.
And selfish. You want these discussions for yourself, but then you also want to make them accessible to people all over who are in the same boat or similar boats.
Mm.
Do you have like a favorite couple of topics or episodes or guests that you've had?
Yeah. You know, I think going back to the beginning of our conversation, when my mom was in Houston and, you know, gave birth and didn't have any friends or support, I think that that's probably a huge reason I do Atomic Moms podcast, because I know how important that first year is and I know how hard it is. And I've been on the other side of it as the child.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could go back in time and give my mom these resources. And I wish I could have created the community that I've been able to create with our listeners for her back then, because it's a very special time in someone's life. And, you know, that relationship, the bonds that are formed in that first year and a half carry on throughout our lives. And they're learning a lot about that with attachment theory. And I think that the episodes I love the most are moms just sharing their experiences like you let me do today, because I realize how much information, how much wisdom, you know, the people that are around me have, you know, that you don't have to have a PhD to know something about living and loving your kids and how not to go totally insane, because I do that on a daily basis. I'm totally nuts, as you can tell. Not that I can hide it. But I'm also really proud of the episodes we've done on postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression. I did a panel a few years ago on that. And, you know, it's important to share our experiences because there are mothers wondering why they're feeling a certain way, or they might not even know that that's what's going on. Like my second mothering of an infant experience has been much easier on me. And we've had a lot of challenges this year, some that I can't discuss on my own show, which sucks. But
you can discuss them here.
Yeah, right. But it's actually been a much easier experience for me because
the challenges?
Yeah. I had postpartum anxiety with my first, and, you know, my pregnancy was a calming experience. It was great. And then I gave birth, and then shortly thereafter, a lot of postpartum anxiety.
Really?
And
the second time?
The first time.
Oh, the first time.
The first time. And so the second time, not so much. And part of that is what I've learned doing the show. Part of it is my community of moms that, you know, it takes some time to build that village your first go around.
Your mommy village?
Yeah. So the second time, it's already built in.
It's great.
And you already know what you're going to get pissed off at your husband about. the other thing I'm really proud of is we've been doing some episodes that sort of focus on protecting our children.
Oh.
And I have felt really good about the messages coming in about we had Patty Fitzgerald, who's an incredible expert on protecting our children from sexual abuse. She's the person who coined the term tricky people instead of stranger danger.
Hmm.
And God, that's a – we did a – it was sort of like a town hall meeting. It was a bunch of parents for that one. And that was, she gave out really, really important information. And then also, you know, I've had Stephanie Small on twice now. She's a trauma expert. She's gone in after school shootings to help families and stuff. And she came on the show to talk about, you know, how to help if you have a kid who's scared to go to school now.
There's so many.
What do you say to them? And how can you help them? And how do you help yourself? And how do you create resources and touchstones so that your child can feel okay being in the classroom?
That's really powerful and so relevant.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but at least I'm glad you're addressing it. Is there somebody on your wish list, like high on your wish list that you want to
get? I already had you on.
Aww.
I already had you on. You know, the first person to come to mind, and it's so bonkers, is Alec Baldwin.
Really?
Yeah. He's one of the main reasons I started podcasting. Here's the thing with Alec Baldwin, his podcast. My mother-in-law kept telling me to listen to it. I finally did, and I listened to it all through my pregnancy with Sabrina, walking up and down those hills, just listening to Alec Baldwin. And I was like, God, I would love to do something like this someday. Because the way he would, you know, learn about a person's whole life, but also like dig into what they were passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly like an opera singer, like something I never would care about. I was like, God, that's so cool.
All of a sudden you do.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So thanks, Alec. Alec Baldwin, please come on Atomic Moms.
Yeah. Great. Speaking of which, where can we find you online?
Mm. On iTunes, of course. Go to itunes.com/atomicmoms. If you like us, I say us. So, us as in our village of mothers.
Yeah.
Right. Subscribe, please. Yeah, I've been doing this since 2014 and it's independently run. Way before it was cool. I host and I produce and I do the research and I edit.
You do everything. I was so impressed. When I came to you, to you for me to be on your show.
16 days after birth.
16 days after birth, maybe you had nothing together, but you seemed to have everything together. You were calm, you were relaxed, you were glowy. You had your whole, you had just set up that studio too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was all set up and you do your own, you do everything.
Thank you.
It's inspiring.
You know,
and you did it before, it's cool. But now I kind of see that drive that you have like to sort of retroactively go back to your childhood.
Right.
And
stuff there.
And try to help both adults and children not have to do that.
You know, it goes back so many, I know you're trying to wrap up. I feel like we're on Howard Stern now. I would also love to have a Howard Stern on Atomic Moms.
I have never been compared to Howard Stern. This is the first time.
You are similar to Howard Stern in your interview.
Okay.
Have you listened to his interviews?
No.
Oh, my God.
Not lately. High school.
They're very thoughtful,
well,
actually.
Thank you. That's a big compliment.
Yeah. You're both very thoughtful gentlemen when it comes to the interview part. I won't speak
about
the other part
about.
Of his
right.
show. But I... what the hell are we even talking about? I lose the threads.
You said Howard Stern should come on the Atomic Moms podcast.
But there was something before that. Oh, I don't know. But thank you for the compliment about having it together. I think I get out all my neuroses. I exercise it on the show. And I was saying Howard Stern because he always like is about to let a guest leave and then they end up talking longer. But I will just say that I went back to my other grandmother also lives in Chicago and she is in her final days. And I got to go through all this genealogy that we had never talked about. And that I don't think she really cared about. Her own mother, my great-grandmother, had cared about this stuff. And so she just had a box of it. And I was able to find out through these really old journals and just through, like, when so-and-so died, I was able to track sort of the maternal lineage. And that was wild. Because there were a lot of early deaths and a lot of, like, you know, and my great-grandmother got sent away to live in California with her aunt. So there's like serious maternal missing links on my mom's side of the family. And that was fascinating to me. And I was like, oh, this is why this is my job.
Interesting.
It's the transgenerational connection
and
disconnect.
You're
I'm forging it back together.
You're putting together a solid link.
Yeah, for my children.
That's so beautiful.
For myself, yeah.
All right. As much as I like to be Howard Stern, we gotta go, sadly. But you promised to come back.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wait. Also, AtomicMoms.com and follow us on social media, on Instagram, at Atomic Moms. I've been doing Insta stories as of late. And you can find us any other, any podcast app.
Yeah. I didn't know you were doing Insta stories because I think I told you earlier I post about once a month religiously. but I'm going to just to follow you more.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for being here. And at home, thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast.
Thank
if you have a topic or a guest you want us to have on, just send your suggestions to info@informedpregnancy.com.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.